In a moment, you're going to hear from Bill Ray. He was one of the Fort Meade Remote Viewer Unit members. An incredible story up next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, let me tell you a bit about our guest tonight, Bill Ray, former commander of the Fort Meade Remote Viewing Unit, one of the five military viewers trained by Ingo Swann. Bill spent more than 3.5 years with the Fort Meade unit, spent approximately 11.5 years involved with remote viewing. He has taught courses in remote viewing in Europe for several years. He's a retired U.S. Army major, now employed for the U.S. Army as a civilian. Bill Ray on Coast to Coast. Commander, how are you?
Hello, George. How are you doing?
Good. One of your unit members sent me an email about 20 minutes ago, said you're one of the best officers he's ever worked under. Mark Watson was his name.
Really?
Yeah. So they find you on this show. It's amazing.
Well, good to hear that. Mark was a good soldier, and that was, 20 years or so.
Oh, my
ago.
Gosh. Did you work at all with the Russell Targs and the Paul Smiths and those folks?
Yes, I did. Russell was leaving SRI when we were going through, but he was still there, and I've known Russell in his association with the Remote Viewing Association. Paul Smith and I first met Paul up in Augsburg in the late 70s. One of the people who worked for me had been a friend of Paul's, and he'd come up and see us at the time. I was commanding the MI unit there. And then Paul and I got together again at the unit, and we kind of maintained contact over the last 20 years or so.
Bill, how did you get involved in remote viewing? I mean, this is something that you just don't wake up in the morning and say, hey, I'm going to be a remote viewer. How did this happen?
Kind of a coincidence. And we like to say that coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. But a soldier who worked for me when I was teaching at the Intel School, a very sharp young staff sergeant, college degree and a whole lot of ability, named Skip Atwater.
Oh, sure.
Yes, was working for me, and I thought he was kind of a waste to the Army, being an NCO. Not that we don't need good NCOs. I was one myself, but I started harassing, I guess, Skip. Every morning I would ask him why he, if he was at OCS, and he would say no, and I would say, why not? And he would say, because I'm here working for you. And I guess eventually he got tired of answering me and did go to OCS. And his first assignment was at Fort Meade, where he kind of backed into the to a remote viewing program. He's the one who actually stood it up for the military.
Okay.
And years later, Skip and I went through a course together, and for about 6 months at Fort Huachuca. And so we hooked back up there, and I stayed at Huachuca and was working a very demanding job, and I used to walk to work in the morning about a mile, and as I walked, I would daydream, as you do, and I started daydreaming, wouldn't it be neat if the Army had some kind of psychic unit or whatever, and not knowing that there was one, and then daydreaming maybe someday would be neat to command such a thing. So when Skip came out to talk to me, it was kind of like I had daydreamed reality happening.
Now, were you very adept at it, or did you develop the skill?
I had no skill at all in the beginning.
an honest man.
Yes. I am a brick, psychically, I thought. But everybody has the psychic chromosome, if you will, the gene, and it's a very trainable ability, and I think I became very good at it over the years.
Bill, tell us a little bit about your military career, because it spanned many, many years. Tell us some of the ups and downs that you had in it.
Oh, well, I first came in the Army in the 1950s, and at that time I was started off in the infantry, airborne, ranger, paratrooper, and I eventually figured out that being cold, tired, wet, and hungry all the time wasn't fun. So I got into intelligence, and I've been doing that for over 40 years now. 20 of those years I spent in Germany, about half in the Cold War and about half afterwards. Loved Europe, Germany, Holland, Italy, And I've done four tours to the Mideast, one to Kuwait, and three to Iraq. And I'm getting ready to go to Afghanistan. So,
as basically a civilian now, though, right?
As a Department of Army civilian, yes.
Oh, you can't get it out of your blood, can you?
I enjoy it. I love being with soldiers. They're the greatest people in the world. Very appreciative.
Yep.
It's a chance to do something that I think is worthwhile.
Anyway. It sure is. I spent 9 years with the Navy.
Congratulations. Thank you for your service.
One more year, I would have been a lieutenant commander. One more year, but I got out, and that was it. But I wanted to get those stripes, but I didn't do it.
Well, congratulations on the 9 years you spent.
You know what? Great people, great friends. It was a good experience.
Yes, I agree.
Now, when you were in intelligence, with what you might be able to share with us or tell us, what were some of the things they wanted you to find?
When we're at the unit?
Mm-hmm.
Whole arena of what was out there, depending who we're working for, detecting if embassies were bugged or not, finding biological, chemical weapon sites, finding out what happened at certain times. We, of course, probably the most famous one and one that's been unclassified is Joe McMonagle's discovery of the Typhoon submarine class.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, and that's I think pretty common knowledge now. But we picked that up 6 months before anybody else. We did a lot of work with trying to locating the hostages, both in Iran and later in Beirut in the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon. There was a whole plethora of things that we did.
Did you make believers of your superiors? Do they look at the work that you all did as a unit and say, you know what, they're pretty darn good?
Some of them did. What we had is the Red Book, and I'm surprised this hasn't got more credit than it has. In the intelligence field, we tend to take reports that come up, and the customer, the person receiving the report, rates them over a period of time.
Okay.
And you may submit 10 intelligence reports, and you may get one back saying this was of some value, or this was of middle value, or this was of great value. And if you get 1 out of 10 back, that's doing pretty good. Now, we carried a Red Book, which had all the projects we had worked over up until the time I left the project in 1987. And 50% of what we did was rated of exceptionally high value by the users.
That's huge.
Yes, it was fantastic. I know of no other platform out there that even came close to what we were hitting on. And that's not saying that we were on target 50% of the time. That's saying that the information we got 50% of the time was not only on target, but it was useful. They could use it to make decisions. So it was, I think that the people we worked for, once we dealt with directly, appreciated us. Several layers removed, the powers that be may not have been so appreciative of. I think part of it was the giggle factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bill, something happened for them to eventually disband a very successful program.
Yes, and that was after I left, obviously, but I had kept contact with some of the people at the unit. I think two things happened. First of all, the giggle factor was always out there, that everybody wanted to use us, but nobody wanted
to admit
anybody else to know that they were using us.
Yeah.
Thus, we would end up meeting in parking lots with senators and congressmen sometimes.
You know, it's like a police department calling a psychic in for help.
Yeah.
But they don't want anybody to know that until after the fact, if it works. Yeah.
And that's, I can understand they would be loath to do that, but it had an effect on us. And I think the other thing was, it's my understanding that over time, after I left the unit and some of the others, that the unit started to get farther away from remote viewing and into other aspects, tarot card readings, contacting spirits, that kind of thing. I can't say I know that, but I've been told that. So as we got farther away, with remote viewing, Engel created, I'm going to say, a pseudoscience behind it, that there is, he could explain how things worked. When we started to get into other things, then we left that behind.
Now, while this was going on, the Soviets were doing this, weren't they?
The Soviets started.
They started it.
Yes, it's my understanding. Now, the way we got into the program was when Skip Atwater got to Fort Meade, he, at that time, the big term in the Army was OPSEC. This is 1977. Operation Security. And so Skip, as a brand new second lieutenant, ended up with a OPSEC unit, going out talking to commanders of units, seeing what we could do to protect their technology, their tactics, their programs, their plans, that kind of thing. And one of the commanders he was talking to had seen a special on TV on Soviet remote viewing. And brought that up, and how do you protect from that? So Skip took that back to the general, and the general tasked Skip to start looking at that, which Skip did. And strangely enough, Skip had a history of psychic phenomena as a youth, so he was just once again another coincidence.
I even know Skip's real first name.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Should I say it? I don't think he likes it.
In fact, sometimes I'll slip and call Skip by the first name. Is what we knew him with for a long time.
Now, do you use the initial or the other name right before the Skip portion?
We use the other name.
Okay. All right.
That's been years. And but so Skip started off and looking at basically how to counter the Soviet threat. And it rapidly became into how to develop a threat of our own. So it went very rapidly from defensive to offensive.
Now, you ended up the commanding officer of the program, didn't you?
Yes, I did, by a strange set of circumstances. About the time we were going from the Army, from INSCOM, over to DIA. And actually, at the time, we were looking for a home. Major Intelligence General, Lieutenant General Odom at the time, was not a big fan of us. He was the only person that I've ever seen that I could show the Red Book to and not convince him that we were a legitimate intelligence.
He could not be sold, could he?
He could not be sold. He would not look at the Red Book, so that was probably part of it.
Now, did he like you guys as people, as officers, or he didn't want anything to do with you at all?
I think he detested us.
Wow,
that may be too strong a word. After he left the Army, of course the project went on under DIA, but he went up and took over the NSA and became known as his director of NSA. And
well, there's no way he would have used you then, huh?
No. And I used to see him all the time, and he would stare at me, and I could see he knew he disliked me, but he couldn't quite tell why or where from.
Aha! Uh-huh. He forgot where you were, huh?
Yes, I think probably on purpose.
Interesting. Yeah, how we tucked that away.
Yep. But some of the generals liked us. Some were a little embarrassed by us, I think.
Did you ever have, as the commanding officer? I mean, did you have carte blanche, or was it a program that you had to save? What was going on then?
When we first came over, the question was where we were going to go, and we were getting ready. The decision was made for us to leave the Army by General Odom and some of the civilians.
End the program.
And to take the program someplace else or to end it. And so we looked around. There were several options that we had, and The best one would have been CIA, obviously.
Sure.
Because we'd done work for them in the past and had been very successful, I think, working for them. The problem was about that time, CIA got into trouble. They had mined the harbors in Nicaragua and a couple of other things. So they really couldn't take any more bad publicity. Not that we would have been, but the chance was there. And
everything they did was bad publicity, wasn't it?
At that time, yes.
Yeah.
And then we had, at the same time, the medical R&D command was looking at us, taking us over. But my problem with putting us up there would have been that we wouldn't have been doing operational things. We would have, I can imagine, sitting down with tubes shoved in both ends trying to find something and to figure out why it worked. And I think that wouldn't have worked for the motivation would have gone out pretty quick. NSA was looking at taking us, but that would have been ComSec.
Were you able to save the program?
We moved it over to DIA under Jack Verona, the number one scientist
How long did it last there, Bill? Do you know?
It lasted, I think it came back to the Army eventually, long after I left. But it found a home there, and we were originally going to go into the attaché section, but at that time, DIA had no collection capabilities. We were a collection unit, and so we ended up, while they were getting ready for us, going into the science and technology, which what was interesting, they put us actually directly under Jack Verona. So nobody was quite sure what we did down there. They knew we were very spooky and
yeah.
We were at Fort Meade, but they had no idea what we did or exactly how dangerous it was.
Well, with a pretty good success rate, Bill, why did it finally disband?
I think a couple things. I'm not sure that when the CIA did the study with the two people that they even looked at our history. And as I say, the project itself, I think, got away from remote viewing, which we had proven we were successful at, and gotten into more esoteric, if you will, things that were less reliable and probably even more of a giggle factor than the project itself.
What might have been one of the biggest projects you all worked on that you would say this one was successful?
Boy, there's a whole slew of them. And we used to talk about the ultimate project, the one that would prove it.
Yeah, yeah.
But Skip and I would talk offline, and we realized that there was no ultimate project. There was no way we were going to convince anybody or everybody, no matter how successful we were. Some of the things we did locate a spy, and we were able to identify him based on remote viewing. We did assist in a lot of other operations. What we wanted to be, rather than to be a sole intelligence source, is we would like to be there and to cue other sources off us or to verify other sources. We were able to pick up some research the Russians were doing with directed energy weapons in Afghanistan, something that the analysts said they were 5 years away from. We were able to pick up they were doing that. And, of course, Joe's Typhoon, listening devices in the American embassy, and several other embassies, which I don't think I can mention, but the one in Russia was the one that was obviously is out in the open now.
Bill, I want to talk with you when we come back after this break about Ingo Swann and some of the things he saw on the backside of the moon. I just want to get your take on that. We'll be back in a moment with Bill Ray on Coast to Coast AM. And we're talking with Major Bill Ray about remote viewing. Lots more to talk about when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Well, we're retired U.S. Army Major Bill Ray. Remote viewing, that's our topic tonight. Bill, let's go back just a little bit. So we have a very successful remote viewing program. It gets canceled. What happened?
Yeah. I think there were, we did have enemies. And we did have friends, and some of our friends may have done more harm to us than our enemies.
Really? How so?
I think maybe people were pushing us too hard at certain levels.
To do certain things?
To do certain things, and to thinking that they were doing us favors by bringing us up at 3- and 4-star level.
Wow, that went up high.
Yes, so it was up to the actually the vice chief of staff of the Army got involved quite a bit in some of the things that were going on that weren't directly related to the program, but ended up under the program because of our human use permits. If you're going to, this was considered human experimentation, so we had to have it okayed yearly by the TJAG, and so that permission got used to do other things, I think, along the way. So, but as I say, we were a small unit. When you have a 12, 13, 14 person unit that's coming up to the 4-star level a couple times each quarter, it becomes difficult.
It sure does.
Yes.
No question about that. Were there events that you can't talk about that you were very successful at in terms of the remote viewing?
Yes. The technology itself is unclassified now. And much of what we did is now unclassified, but some of the things that some of the targets, some of our successes are still, I'd be leery to talk of them because some of the operations, the effects are still ongoing.
They really are, years later.
Yes.
Were there any preposterous subjects that they wanted you to study and look at? I mean, did they go as far as, you know, this is back in the 60s are we talking about here?
Well, 70s? This is the 80s.
The 80s, okay. I mean, did they want you to spy on a politician, you know, go into his or her bedroom or anything like that?
We didn't go that far. In fact, we, you know, the intelligence community has very strict limitations on what we can do. And if you want to exceed those limitations, you need approval from either a court or the attorney general, whatever. Those don't necessarily apply to remote viewing, but for most part we tended to apply those to ourselves, I think.
Kind of difficult to control a remote viewer.
Yes, it is. But in order to surveil a U.S. citizen, you have to go through certain jump through certain hoops. Obviously not necessarily so when you're remote viewing, but we try to wherever possible to limit what we were doing to foreign nationals or to non-U.S. entities, if you will.
Did they ever ask you to try to assassinate someone by remote viewing?
Nope, we never did. That would be remote influencing.
Yep. Could that have been done? I mean, could you have given somebody a heart attack if you wanted to?
I don't think so. And there are those in the program who will disagree with me. I think remote influencing is possible in small ways. I think perhaps that's what prayer is. If you're praying for somebody,
sure,
that could be considered remote influencing. I think that it may be possible to give hints to somebody psychically to do certain things. I don't think you could compel them. Or if there's a strong moral prohibition against what you want them to do, they won't do it. But I think you could probably give some hints and leave them there. But other than that, remote influencing is,
I mean, that's like even entering a dream state, isn't it? You can enter somebody's dream state and try to kill him that way.
I suppose that's a good question. I I'm a little leery on that.
Okay.
Yep. It would take someone with really strong abilities, and in remote viewing, you can contact somebody's subconscious, I think, and read their intentions.
Bill, how did you recruit prospective remote viewers for your program?
Ah, well, it was basically the good old boy system. Somebody knew somebody, and of course, it has drawbacks, but the advantage is that you're getting a known quantity. I look for three things. First of all, somebody had to be sane.
Sane?
Sane. If somebody was...
Where do you find that?
That's a judgment call.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. One person's sanity is another person's insanity, I suppose. But we look for somebody who was sound. I didn't want anybody cracking up in the program because that would influence the program for years to come.
Good point. What other steps?
The second thing I look for was somebody who could get along. We could actually recruit somebody and then train them, and they may not be a great remote viewer, but they could still do other things in the unit, monitor and do things around the unit, and we'd work on them to build them up to become a better remote.
You didn't want any prima donnas, did you?
We didn't want anybody who would disrupt the unit. When you have a 12-person unit and if you lose one body, then you're down to 11, and that one body can do other things to support the other 11. But if you get one body in who starts forming cliques and starts being diverse, what you end up with is instead of losing one body or half a body, you end up losing four or five. So it was somebody who could get along in the small unit, and that was critical, I thought.
Sure. And what was your third thing?
Third was I look for people with good reputations, because we were trying to sell ourselves to the rest of the community. So somebody who was a known, who was respected by others in the intelligence field, who could talk the intelligence talk, who understood how intelligence worked, then that gave us credibility, professionalism, and that's something we needed.
Did you have... I'm sorry, go ahead, Bill.
Oh, and of course we gave them all kinds of tests, the Myers-Briggs and the Minnesota Psychological Test. I'm not sure how important that was and how much a role that played in it. We would look at those kind of things, and they're a great management tool, but you can teach anybody to remote view, so I'm not sure how important those tests were.
Did you have some people in the program who just didn't get it?
We had a couple who were very difficult. One was a psychic, and it became very hard to untrain her so we could train her up our way, and to basically train her in the way, in the technology and the protocols that Ingo had come up with, which limited a lot of the imagination and became a very easy way to teach things. But we were never able to get her off what she was doing and into a more structured environment. So we eventually had to part ways with her. She came to us by way of the general who had gone out and recruited her for us, not at our request.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the father of remote viewing, Ingo Swann.
Yes.
Wonderful guy. You know, yes, I think is. The world he... He knew my aunt well. I don't know if you knew her, Shafika Caregula.
No, but... I did hear Ingo speak of her early on in training.
Yep.
He did a history of psychics going back hundreds of years and then moving forward. And we spent weeks going through, and your aunt was one of the names that did come up.
She was a psychiatrist who gave up her medical practice to concentrate on the psychic realm. And she was into telepathy and all that. I mean, she was one of the pioneers getting involved in that. But...
Very true. And Ingo quoted from some of the things she did.
Yep. They get along well, too.
Yeah, I believe that, yes.
Eventually, he wrote a book called Penetration, and he saw things on the far side of the moon. Russell Targ has told me on this program, he said, I love Ingo Swann. I think the world of him. He's phenomenal at what he does. He said, but it was a book, and maybe, you know, he made it a little more sensational than it was. So let me ask you, Bill, do you think Ingo Swann actually saw structures on the far side of the moon?
I think it's entirely possible.
Wow.
And Yes. Ingo is, once again, the father of remote viewing. He's the one who was able to, control remote viewing is his gift. I don't believe it's the way he remote viewed. I don't think he knew how he remote viewed. He just did it. And so he had to come up and develop a system that he could teach, and that's ideally what controlled remote viewing is. It's something that goes from stage one through stage six, and you can train it that way, and anybody can learn it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So if he says, I'm seeing artificial structures on the moon, they might be there.
They might be there, yes. I wouldn't, not being a betting man anymore.
All right, so I've got to ask you this. I ask everybody who comes on when they talk, when we're in this kind of arena, during your military career, Bill, did they ever talk about extraterrestrial life or that they knew something that the public didn't know? Anything like that that you can tell us tonight? Major.
You realize I'm still employed by the Army.
I know. Don't worry. We'll get you a job if something happens.
Okay. Of course, there have been hints. And one hears stories constantly, and then somebody says, and this is top secret, so you can't repeat it. We hear those kind of stories.
From people that you trusted and believed?
Yes. And some from people who maybe are a little farther out. Now, I did spend almost 10 years in New Mexico working counterintelligence all through the last decade, covering both Roswell and then, of course, where we had the infamous crash.
You covered those?
No, I covered the whole area of the state.
Was
one, and of course, Aztec, where we had the second crash 6 months later.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are you convinced that something crashed and it might have been outside of planet Earth?
I believe that's entirely possible.
I know you know something. You're holding back. I can tell in your voice.
Yeah. I think the Air Force has perhaps protested too much, come up with too many convenient explanations for what went on at Roswell. And Aztec never really got any publicity.
No, minimal. Even now.
True.
It's always Roswell. So it would not surprise you then.
No, I would not be surprised if...
If you officially were told we have extraterrestrial life out here.
Yes, that would...
And we know about it.
Extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional or extra-time travel or whatever, no. I think all those are possible. Once again, I am a intelligence officer who was a psychic for a while.
So tomorrow, if you opened up a newspaper and it said, retired U.S. Army Major Bill Ray believes that we've been visited, would it shock you to see that?
No, I don't think so. No.
And you wouldn't deny it the next day?
No.
You couldn't. Couldn't. We have you on tape.
Can you run that back 10 seconds?
Exactly.
No, I think it's possible. I'm not sure it's happened, but I would not be surprised. I think there's enough strange things happening in the world that it would explain a lot of things.
Are you convinced that there are people in government who know these answers?
If it has happened, I'm sure the government's aware of it, and I'm sure they're covering up for a reason. But once again, I am not sure that it's happened. But I don't think it could have happened and the government not be aware
right.
of what's going
on. Well, as a matter of fact, about a week ago, President Obama was talking to Will Smith's son, a little 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And Jaden, over his father's protesting, asked the president about ETs, and President Obama said, "I can neither confirm nor deny." And we, you know, you being in the military, you know what that means when you say that.
And of course, Jimmy Carter got asked the same question. With roughly the same answer, I believe. So it's an interesting field. If somebody knows out there, then they're covering it up for a reason. And I'm sure they believe it's for our greater good, or if not for our greater good, at least for their greater good.
So when you had these people in and you went through this scenario, these three major items that you checked them out, you decided to retain them into your unit. Did they know how to remote view before this started, or did you have to train them?
We trained them. I would much prefer to take somebody who we don't have to unlearn, so we can start from scratch and bring them up. That's, as I say, Skip had some ability prior to that. I guess Joe McMonagle, who's probably, he and Ingo are probably two of the greatest living remote viewers. But most of the others came in, and we trained them from the very start, and they trained me from the very start. And the talent is there. Anybody can do it. I believe it's more a matter of learning to contact your subconscious, which has access to the information, and opening up a channel between you and the subconscious so it can get the information that you want it to get to you. It's a matter of developing that contact.
What determined what was a successful remote viewer? What percent, for example, of hits?
Now we're into Lynn Buchanan's area, keeping records.
I mean, did you ever throw somebody out of the unit because they just weren't good?
No. Well, once again, the female we couldn't train. Most people are you can train them well enough so that they can be a benefit. They can be operational. And with controlled remote viewing, we considered once you got past stage four that you were operational and could work targets and gather information. We not only worked control remote viewing, we also worked extended remote viewing, which was a more esoteric way of working. So we would try work at least a couple viewers, and if possible, in a couple different ways, maybe one viewer in CRV and two viewers in ERV on our target, and then put all the information together.
What makes a person, Bill, a good remote viewer? I mean, what kicks into their system that gives them that ability?
One thing I would say, and it's an excellent question, George. Jeez. And it's kind of the basis of everything, isn't it?
It sure is.
I would say the ability to shut off the imagination.
Good point.
Yes, and Ingo came up. Developed a way to do that, and it's pretty much used by everybody now, no matter how you're working, either controlled remote viewing or any of the other ways that are out.
Because your imagination can do all kinds of tricks on you.
Right.
Really
and once
can.
And once it kicks in, then you're gone.
Yeah. You're right. Bill, we're going to talk more. We're coming back 2 more hours to go as we talk about remote viewing and also phone calls as well. Fascinating subject. Lots more to talk about right here on Coast to Coast AM.